Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. My name is Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Anthony Gitch, all the way over there, wherever there may be. As usual, Anthony and I are not doctors, medical professionals, psychologists, or psychiatrists, so do not make any changes to any medications or treatments you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like, leave the rest, and while you're leaving stuff, hey, you might as well leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, a really great review. And you might as well share us around with your friends and family because sharing is caring.
That's right. And we know that you care.
Good morning.
Good evening, dear.
Thank you.
It's late in the evening there. Yes, it is. In lovely, very, 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 very hot Spain.
Yes.
It's like very warm there. Yes.
It's very warm. I have a frozen towel in the freezer, which comes out on days like this so that my laptop doesn't decide to melt completely.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and Spain is on fire right now, just like America is and like France is. Everywhere is on fire right now from these damn droughts and these heat waves.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy, but that's okay. I'm so excited about coming to see you next week.
I know. We're finally going to get to meet in person. Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Well, I'll already be over there when this episode comes out. But yes, in 2 days, I'm taking off to go and see all of my lovely friends in the UK. So excited.
Very exciting.
Yes.
It is exciting. I do like traveling. I enjoy traveling. I enjoy the whole rigmarole of going to the airport and, you know, getting on a plane and making yourself comfortable. And yeah, I do enjoy. I enjoy the whole travel thing.
The only part that I find stressful. And it's not even stressful, other than the fact that I make it stressful for myself. Is boarding of the plane. And it's not bad anymore because I fly business class now. And so I usually get to do sky priority, which means that I'm like, you know, after first class and I get to get on. So, cause I'm always like, oh my God, that person has got like 10 fucking bags and they're only supposed to have one. And where am I going to, you know, and then I get myself all worked up, you know, where am I going to put my stuff? Oh my God. But I'm not worried about that now. I've got everything all set and yes, super excited. And today we are talking about
travel. No, I'm joking.
Yes. Well, travel. Well, yeah, we can talk a little bit about travel. It's the stresses of travel, right? I mean, what happens? You travel more than anybody I know. But you know, my aunt, she was a big traveler. She was a travel agent and a tour guide.
Mm.
And she, when we were kids, it was amazing. And people, they need to pay attention to this because they need to take their children and travel. I think that people need to travel more with their children. We got these flags, these felt flags from every country and place that my aunt went. And so wall was filled with all of these things and it made it interested in other places. Yeah, travel. What an interesting topic today. How did we get off on that? But that's going to be fun. Because it can be stressful, right? I mean, like I said, it's stressful for me when I used to have to sit in the back and think, oh my God, there's not going to be room. Because I don't travel with bags, right? I mean,
right.
I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks and I've got a carry-on and a personal item, you know, that I can fit. I know how to pack. That's the one thing. I mean, living on the road with the Lipizzans like I did, you learn to live with very little.
No, I love traveling. Before the pandemic, I was traveling probably at least every 6 weeks. I think I would be at home for the longest period, be 6 weeks before I went off somewhere for a few days or whatever it was, whether it was for personal or for business purposes. I was traveling a lot. So kind of when the pandemic hit, I was like, oh God, thank God for that. Just some time out to chill and be at home and not have to pack my suitcase.
Right.
So yeah, I was a kind of a frequent flyer. But I really enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I enjoy the whole thing of packing my suitcase, deciding what I'm taking. I try and travel light as well. So usually I'll only take a carry-on and like a backpack or something like that.
Yeah.
If I'm doing a short trip, if I'm doing a slightly longer trip or something, then or I need to take a bigger suitcase, then I will. But I really enjoy the whole process from the booking of the trip. And I used to work for a school where I had to organize appointments with different agents in different countries and try and organize appointments in similar areas. It's quite a complex little operation of traveling. I mean, one of my trips, I went to about six countries in Latin America over the space of about 3.5 weeks and was in a whole load of different cities and had to arrange appointments with different agents in different cities and try and make sure that that could coordinated.
You know what's also amazing to me? I hear that and I hear how you have to be so, you know, understanding where things are and getting things set up and that sort of thing. Mm. But when I say, oh my gosh, I'm going to go to March or I'm going to go to Wisbech, you're like, where's that? And it's in the freaking country where you grew up. I was talking to Debbie today and I says, it blows my mind. I'm like, I've talked to Tim, I've talked to all these people over there and I'm like, this is where I'm going to go. They're like, where's that?
It's yeah,
like,
but you're talking oh my about God. A tiny little village in the middle of nowhere.
No, but you know, March is not a tiny little village in the middle of nowhere. Because we've heard about it in history books, right? From the things that happened there.
Oh, we don't study British history at school in the UK.
But see, this is the interesting thing because
I studied American history when I was in secondary school.
We had to learn all 50 states and all 50 state capitals, right? So we know in this country pretty much where everybody else is when they say, oh, I'm going to be in Nashville, Tennessee. Or it's like, oh, we know where that is. Or, you know, Miami or whatever it may be. We know exactly where in the country that is. And you say that to someone over there, you're like, where's that?
Yeah, but it's really funny for us how you guys, the Americans, you always say the town and the state. Everybody introduces themselves that way. I mean, yeah. I'm in
Seattle, wherever. Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Always. That's it. It comes as a little package. And over, you know, the Brits are like, oh, that's weird, isn't it? Why do you need to do that?
Because it's that's
that's too much information. If I wanted the extra information, I'd ask.
Because we're interested in, you know, are you a redneck idiot or are you someone intelligent? I guess I don't know.
We don't do that in the UK. And to be fair, my geography.
But
you
guys can tell each other where you're from your accents.
Not necessarily. No, not necessarily. Some accents, yes, but some accents, not necessarily. But also, I mean, yeah, I could tell you, I could more or less tell you where the main cities are in the UK, but not towns. I've not traveled around the UK much. You know, I've been to Scotland twice in my life. You know, I've never been to Ireland. I've never been to Wales. So yeah, I don't know England.
You've never been
to
Wales?
No.
Have you ever been to Nottingham?
Yes, actually, because I was working there for a summer.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you hadn't been to the Lake District until you went up to the Jacquins retreat.
No, that's
just amazing to me. And
you have to remember,
it's such
Anthony,
a beautiful country.
It is lovely. And having been there for the past 9 months, you know, I really connected with it again. I say again, probably for the first time, actually, in a completely different way, because I was going and looking for like forests and places to walk and nature and things like that. It's not a relationship I'd ever had with England. I'd never had that kind of relationship before. So you have to remember, I left for the first time when I was 17 to go and live abroad. And went back purely for university and then left again and never went back to live until 9 months ago. So my relationship with the UK has literally just been dipping my toe in to visit family or just to go and work for a summer. And that's it. It's you know, I can tell you a lot about Spanish geography because I've traveled cross country many times. But not in England, not in the UK. And like I say, I've been to Scotland twice in my life, once when I was a teenager and once as an adult when I went to a Buddhist meditation retreat, which was fabulous. But this time round, because I know my interests more, right. You know, I have my interests, and my interest is very much grounded in nature and walking and forestry and things like that. Every week I'd go to a different place to go walking, and I was like, wow, it's amazing. Like, the nature here is amazing. The variety of vegetation is incredible. This is what really fills me up. When I went to the Lake District, I was like, wow, I can feel this place breathing. Like, literally, I was standing in the middle of a forest, and I was like, I can feel the forest breathing. Like, it's just, and I fell in love with it. But before that, I'd never really had the means to travel around the country like that either. You know, so I've done a lot of that here in Spain. I did a lot of that when I was in the south of France as well. But not so much in the UK. So yeah, no, I don't know the UK very well at all.
It's interesting because, you know, as a kid, we traveled in a car from where we are all the way to the middle of the country, which took like 4 or 5 days of traveling to get there with, you know, to go to Iowa, right? And you know, along the way, we would stop at Yellowstone and all of those places and camp. And so we saw this country in the back of a car.
You've got a huge country to go and explore as well.
Exactly. And I mean, there's no history here like there is there, but you know, I mean, there is, but there isn't. But I mean, there's a lot of beautiful things to see. We saw amazing things growing up that, you know, I mean, that was just the way that we did things. And we've also got a highway system here that is pretty unsurpassed when you think about, like, when I hear my mom talk about trying to get those 2 hours that it is from her village to London. It isn't like driving the 128 miles between Seattle and Portland. You know,
The motorways in England are a nightmare. They're a disaster. Because you've got so many cars in such a small country. I mean, think about it this way. I drove from Kent to the Lake District. It should take about 6 hours if you don't stop. Okay. Which is not. It's not massive. You're talking about, I think, about 300 miles or something like that. It's not huge. But that's, you're basically crossing country. You're going almost from one end of the country to the other in that amount of time. But the highway systems, the motorway systems, they collapse because there's too many cars. There's too many people moving around on those because there's only like one or two main motorways that will take you up north.
And they're only like one or two lanes, right?
No, you have 3 lanes. Yeah.
Okay. See, and
if they're doing roadworks.
Right. See, and we've got, you know, 4 lanes, you know, each direction and you know.
And you guys have got, what do you call them, carpool lanes and things like that, haven't you?
Well, we only have those in the city.
Right.
Those aren't for everywhere. They're only during certain times of travel and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited because when I get back, hopefully the West Seattle Bridge will be all fixed and reopened and that'll make things easier for traveling here. But yeah, there is that difference. You guys don't have that same infrastructure.
Yeah. So going back to what we were talking about before, the job that I had was very complex in terms of having to put together these trips, right? I was coordinating the appointments with the agents, and then based on that and making sure that I had all of that, I had to book all the flights and transport and this, that, and the other, and getting from one place to another and hotels and whatnot. And it was very much a domino effect. So if I missed one flight, that would knock out the rest of my trip, which nearly happened once in Mexico, but I managed to get on the flight. But I really enjoy it. I enjoy it from that initial process. I like that kind of puzzling things together. So our process to get back to Spain now with Gabby, because it's not that easy to get a dog in and out of the UK, that was quite a major process as well. That was like a 36-hour trip, basically, between me and Vinicius. And it was quite complex to put together. It took me about 3 hours to work it all out and book all the
tickets. I remember when you got Gabby over there, what an ordeal it was.
But I find that sort of thing, I guess it's the way that my mind works, right? It's problem solving. It's solving a puzzle and figuring things out. And I really enjoy doing that sort of thing. I enjoy looking at the different options and comparing and seeing what would be best and making things kind of fit together in that way. So yeah, and like I say, packing and then going to the airport, getting to the airport, the whole airport experience.
You need to start arranging things then for when you come over for Hypno Thoughts next year, because you need to get your presentations ready to send in so you can maybe do a presentation, and we're going to be doing a pre or a post. So, and then after that, you know, Vinicius is going to have to come with you and or at least join us at some point so he can come to Seattle. And you guys are going to have to come and hang out for a week.
Yeah, I'd love to, definitely. I'd really love to come back to the States because it's been a while, and I've got some family in California that are also have also invited us with doors open. So yeah.
Yes, your mom is there still, isn't she?
She is. Yeah.
Is she still having a good time? I spoke to her when she first got here, and then I've just been so busy I haven't spoken to her since.
Yeah, no, she's having a great time. She is. She's having a great time. She's another, I call her Dora the Explorer. She loves to go exploring. She loves to just go for a drive. She'll just get in the car and I'm just going for a drive. And I'm like, okay. And she'll just drive around. I prefer to walk. Just drop me somewhere and I'll go walking, you know. And that's, I think, why for me it's good to have a dog, because I love going exploring with a dog.
Right.
And I'll almost make more of an effort to find somewhere exciting to go walking for. Well, definitely. I will make more of an effort to find somewhere exciting to go walking for the dog, so we can both go and explore together. And that way I find some really beautiful places and I get to know places really well. When I first moved to Spain, to Barcelona, I spent the first year walking everywhere, like everywhere. I got to know the city like the back of my hand because I walked everywhere. And I remember stopping somebody once and asking them, because I would walk across from one end of the city to the other. And I remember once stopping somebody to ask them, you know, which direction more or less was this other place. And she was like, just jump on the metro. She was like, it's miles away. And I was like, no, it's fine. If you could just more or less point me in the direction, I'll just carry on zigzagging. And she was like, no, you need to get on the metro. I was like, no, it's fine.
You know, I mean, that's when I was a kid, that's how it was for me in Washington, D.C. I was, you know, 12 years old and I had run of the city because my grandmother worked and my aunt and uncle worked. And so it was like, I was just like, here's a bus pass, go explore. And I walked and rode a bike all over Virginia and Alexandria and Washington, D.C. And I had a big ass dog. My cousins had a dog. His name was Vodka, big Irish wolfhound that was in advertisements and stuff like that. Beautiful, big black and white Irish wolfhound. So, you know, I had this huge dog. No one messed with me. It was amazing. I love to explore. I'm looking forward to coming over and doing this. This is going to be a 10-hour flight, but I'm doing business class, so it won't be too terrible.
I'm sure you'll be fine being looked after in business class.
I'm hoping I get an upgrade to first class like they did when I came back from Vegas.
That would be nice.
It was very nice. I was looking at my boarding pass thinking, okay, come on, let's board when I was in Vegas. And I looked down and it updated and it's like, wait a minute, Sky Priority. Wait, what? And I looked at the seat number and I'm like, seat number 3? Wait, what? Ooh, even better. Yeah.
So while we're on the subject of flights, because we know that fear of flying is a massive thing people in our industry help people with.
I've worked with several people that have that. Yes.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Go on. Tell us a little bit about working with clients with fear of flying.
For most people, I'm not going to say for most people. For the few people that I have worked with, their fear is based on turbulence. right? That sort of thing. Once they get in and that door shut, now all of a sudden they feel like they're trapped.
Right.
And so having just working with the crew member, you know, with that is all I've ever had to do. Because I've always been, when I've been doing control, I never did any kind of phobia. I hadn't worked with any phobias like that previous to doing the control system. And so it's made it really easy and it's never been an issue. But that's, one of them was doing a lot of flights between Seattle and Spokane, which is just what we call a puddle jumper. It's just an hour and a half flight across the state, you know, for work. And as soon as those doors would close, he would start to get hyperventilate. And so, yeah, it was, I don't remember much beyond that. I mean, it wasn't really exciting. I guess I could pull his things. There was nothing that stood out. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. But there are plenty of hypnotists that work with a lot with people that have a fear of flying. And there have been some really high profile cases as well. There was a high profile case a few years ago of a kid that got stuck in Dubai. The family got stuck in Dubai, I think it was, because the kid wouldn't get on the airplane. And I can't remember the name of the hypnotist, but a hypnotist got in touch with the newspaper, a British hypnotist, I believe, and flew out there, worked with the kid, got him back and had great coverage, like had really great coverage from working with this kid and bringing him back on the airplane. And then obviously,
how old was this kid?
I can't remember. I don't know the details of the case, but it was a really high profile case. And that's a really great way of getting exposure as a hypnotist to, you know, go and help somebody that's in that sort of situation. You get the exposure from the press. And then you become known as the person to go to for that kind of problem.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Talk about creating a great niche for yourself.
Yeah. And there's so many people with a fear of flying. And I mean, I know I'm definitely not afraid of flying. Like I say, I quite enjoy it, but I have a tendency to get quite sick.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Especially more than anything when we're landing, if I don't take a travel sick pill, I get really sick on the landing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And when I was a kid and I used to travel, I would throw up all over who I was sitting next to me.
Oh God. Yeah. I don't, I'm lucky like that. I don't get air sick. There's occasionally that if I haven't had something to eat, that my tummy will get upset if it's really early in the morning. Right. But as long as I've got some crackers, or anything in my stomach, I'm going to be fine. I don't get seasick. I've gotten seasick one time where it was bad. Oh my God, it was so bad. I hadn't been off the boat for 2 days. And we were sailing from Seattle up to way, way north in Canada, through the Inside Passage, or not that far, but up towards April Point. And oh my God, we hit 15-foot seas as we were going through the Straits of Juan, what I call the Straits of Juan de Fuca. They're the Straits of Juan de Fuca is what it's called, through the Salish Sea. But oh my God, it was just miserable for me. But now I don't ever get seasick anymore.
So this is an interesting one because I get terribly seasick. So I'm quite a sucker for getting travel sick.
You love to travel.
Yeah. In cars, for example, I get quite travel sick. But actually, like if I'm not driving, I can get really travel sick. And at one point, I remember I used to have to drive back from work around a really kind of windy road. And at night, even if I was driving, I'd have to pull over because I'd get a bit travel sick.
I don't like being in the back of a car. I like to be in the front of a car. If I'm going to be in the back, I need to have the window open. I need to have fresh air because in cars, there are times, especially depending upon who the driver is, if they're on and off their freaking brake and all that shit. Yeah, I'm not down for that. I hope you're a good driver, Nicole, because
and that's the thing with boats. I will not travel on a boat because I know I just have had terrible, terrible experiences where it's taken me days to get over the travel sickness of being on a boat. So I do wonder, because this is not something that I've ever worked on with hypnosis, and I do wonder whether I'm sure it absolutely is effective hypnosis for travel sickness. Have you had any experience?
Why wouldn't it be? Well, of course.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's because you just got a crew member who's like, okay, this is when I'm supposed to get sick. This is when I'm supposed to get my attention, or I'm supposed to do whatever for whatever reason, right? I mean,
Yeah,
I mean, it's like any other, like an allergy or any other thing like that. Yeah. It's just a matter of working with that crew member, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is where I love things, because see how we overcomplicate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, immediately we're going to, well, could you, instead of, well, why not?
Yeah, sure.
It's always easy because, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, do it and see, because I mean, what's it going to hurt?
It's funny that it's never occurred to me to work on it in a practice session or anything like that. It's never occurred to me to work on that. And I don't know why.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I mean, look at, we work with inner ear stuff, right? We work with vertigo. I was really proud of myself when I was at HypnoThoughts. We all went to the big private party up on the rooftop. Well, it wasn't on the roof, but they had a balcony. It was on the top floor. And I'm not real fond of you know, heights like that. They don't bother me, but I'm not always comfortable depending upon who's out there, right? But I felt fine as long as I wasn't near the edge. But when I start to get near the edge, my legs start to tingle. And I don't remember who I was talking to, but someone was like, oh yeah, I was always afraid because I always felt like I wanted to throw myself over. And I thought, oh, well, that doesn't seem... And apparently that's a fairly normal kind of feeling for some people to have. It's like the fear is because you're afraid they're gonna be compelled to jump. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah, I've never felt like that's why my legs tingle, because I'm going to jump. No, that's not what my fear is. I have no fear of tossing myself off the 20th floor. It was a really interesting sort of, because, you know, that is a big fear for some people. And I remember in my 20s where mine kind of, I never liked going out on balconies that were, you know, above, you know, the 17th, 18th floor, unless they were solid, you couldn't see through them, right? I mean, if you could see, does that make sense? So if they were solid, I felt comfortable. But if you could see through them and they were like glass, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know about that. And if they have like chains that come down and hold it like to the side of the building, like it's propped up there and like lean.
Yeah.
Fuck no, I ain't going out on that thing.
It's a bit of a trip though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like there's a suspended bridge. There's that bridge in, I think there's one someplace in Europe somewhere, and then there's one in Asia that's like a glass bridge across this gorge. And it's like, that would be amazingly, I would love to do it, but it would be really just, I would feel like I would need to be strapped to something. But because you see people in the videos that I've watched and they're like crawling across it because it's just.
Yeah, it's look, there's amazing things around the world. And I've done some pretty crazy stuff, I think, having traveled so many places, especially when I was younger, when I was in my early 20s and I was traveling around. And in New Zealand, it's quite typical to do bungee jumps and sky jumps and things like skydives and things like that. And I did a number of them. And more than anything, I think I was doing these things to overcome a fear.
Right.
You know, I was very much like, face your fear, you know.
That's why I did this thing called the Sky Rider in Virginia at an amusement park. They take you and they hook you up to this harness, much like what you probably were in, and they just take you up like 15 floors, and then you pull the thing and you just free fall until the chain catches you. And and it's over pavement.
Yeah,
I did that so I could get over things, and I did that a couple times.
I don't know that I honestly, I don't know, because every time I did about four or five bungee jumps. And the first one I did was, I think it was one of the biggest in the world. It was like 300 and something feet above the ground or something. And it was like a cable car basically suspended in the middle of a valley. It's quite a famous bungee jump in New Zealand. And for some reason in my mind, I was like, well, you might as well do this one first rather than the other ones that were... and we got there and you had to literally take a cable car out to this thing that was suspended in the middle of the air.
Oh, that would be creepy, creepy, creepy.
And I literally, like, I had my feet tied up. I was ready to go. And I just went into, like, I went into a full-on panic and was just going nuts. And I think I was crying and everything. And the guy that was holding on to me, he was like, I can't push you. You have to jump off yourself. And then I think this had been going on for about 15 minutes or something. He's like, right, that's it. Either you jump or you don't. And I was like, oh, fuck that, I'm going. Do you know what I mean? Like, he gave me the ultimatum. And my pride, my ego really kicked in and was like, well, I've said I'm going to do it, so I have to do it. I'm here. And I did it in the most unelegant manner I think anybody's ever done this. And I basically curled up into a little ball and rolled off the end of the platform. And I think I did that on every single jump. I basically, even though I took a run up to the, on one of them, I took a run up to the platform, stopped, curled up into a ball and fell off the edge.
Yeah, you know, I've never done bungee jumping, mostly because I'm afraid of how it would do on my body. That kind of jolt.
There is an element where I would watch people who would literally just put their arms out and then, you know, just kind of like free fall, if you like. And I was like, shit, my brain would not let me do that. You know, my mind just, either, like I say, I was trying
self-preservation.
Yeah. And it was really interesting at the time, because again, I was only 23 or 24 or something like that. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, in order to throw yourself off a building to take your own life, you really have to be at a point where that self-preservation is so, you know, it's so damaged. Damaged, I don't know if that's the right word, but do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Like,
yeah, that you really have to be able to break through that barrier, because it's a strong barrier. You know, there's definitely something there saying, no, don't do that. You know, like,
right. That's like my legs when I walk out to a balcony. Yeah. It's like when I walk out on that balcony, my lower legs are going, my lower body, which is the flight or fright, you know, when you got flight or fight, if it's your lower body, that's the flight. If it's your upper body, that's the fight. Right. And my lower body, when I start to walk out on something like that, I was like, no, back the fuck up. That's not safe, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, don't go out there.
Yeah. And I remember thinking about that. I remember really comparing it to the idea of throwing yourself off a building and thinking, shit, you know, the headspace now, that you have to be in to be able to do that is quite intense.
Think about that. Then those people that I was talking to who are always afraid to go out there because they would felt compelled to throw themselves off. Right. I mean,
see, and I've not heard of that before.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that before either, and I thought, wow. And apparently it's not that uncommon. Those are probably who would be the best bungee jumpers. I mean, if, you know, I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't feel compelled to throw myself. I have felt compelled to throw myself off a horse before at full speed or whatever, or when things are going really fucking haywire. I've been like, okay, time to just dismount.
Well, that's also in the name of self-preservation, isn't it?
Right.
If you think that it's going to be worse to stay on the horse than to chuck yourself off of it, you know?
That ground looks a lot more spongy than the wall.
Right. And another thing that I did when I was in New Zealand, I did a skydive, and you're going up in this rickety little plane. Honestly, it sounds like it's about to just fall to pieces at any moment. It's going crack, 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 as you're going up however many thousands of feet. And because it was my first jump and my only jump, let me reiterate, I was attached to an instructor. So it was a tandem jump, and they opened the door And he basically hung me, literally, he hung me out the door. And I was like, no, 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 no. Oof. I didn't really have a choice on this one. I was just, as soon as he opened the door, I was like, shit, no. And then literally he booted us out. And I didn't enjoy it personally. I didn't enjoy it because during the free fall, I couldn't get the breathing right. It's really hard to breathe during the free fall because you're falling at such a speed. And I was really struggling to breathe properly. And then when he opened the, what do you call it? The parachute. He opened the parachute and he was like, right, well, you can pull this and go that way and pull this and go that way. And I was like, you're going to have to stop doing that because I'm going to vomit at any given moment. And that really took me, that was like travel sickness. And it took me days to get over that. I felt sick for days afterwards.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me because I mean, that's just like coming in for a landing on an airplane without the plane.
Yeah. But it's interesting to think about, you know, why did my crew members feel that they need to keep me in that state of nausea for that period of time?
Because they don't like you doing it. They yes. think it's not safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Alarm bells, don't do that again.
Yeah, you just need to let them know that you're in fact having fun.
Yeah. But no, I wouldn't want to do that again. I've done it. I've been there. I've done that. I've had my experiences and I wouldn't do them again.
I don't have any desire to. I used to want to do skydiving, and I wouldn't, you know, if it was something interesting, I might go do it with a bunch of people. But to like go, okay, next weekend I want to plan a skydive. Nah, not really.
Yeah.
I would much rather go on a horseback ride someplace.
Yeah. Yeah. But in terms of traveling for me has been such a central part of my life since I was definitely since I left and picked up for the first time and went on my own. I stuck a backpack on my back and was like, right, I'm out of here. And I bought a one-way ticket to Australia and stopped off in Asia for 4 months, I think it was, and just, you know, traveled alone, meeting people and doing different things. And ever since then, and even before that, but definitely I love traveling on my own. I love going to different places. I love, you know, exploring and getting to know cultures and I'm not very much, you know, I like cities, but I'm not a massive city person. You know, I'm not the kind of person that's going to go to museums and things like that. I'd much rather go hiking or go walking in a small village and things like that and discovering the place in that way. In Bolivia and Peru, for example, I did a lot of hiking and loved it, like really loved it, saw some amazing places and really kind of appreciated the beauty of how people live in the countryside. And it's, you know, in Peru, I spent some time in a village, again, in the middle of nowhere, really, but all of their houses are made from adobe bricks. And they had these beautiful houses. And I was like, it's just, I love it. It's amazing. You know, you don't need these big fancy constructions. You can make a beautiful house or place to live out of mud and water, basically. You know, mud, wow. Hay, water, whatever you've got. You can make these incredible constructions and beautiful
those,
homes.
In areas where you can be supported by that, can you imagine having a mud home in Seattle or a mud home in
no,
England?
No, but what I'm saying is what people think they need in a city is being fed by,
that's
is being fed
so
very
subjective.
Much
by. It's also subjective, right? I mean, I need hot water.
Yeah, I've lived many times without water and without running water and without electricity.
Yeah, see, hippie, I can't do that, you freak.
But again, it's given me a different perspective, and it's definitely given me gratitude for the small things in life.
Like,
you know,
hot water.
Yeah, it's not. It's really nice to have running hot water, to just be able to open a tap and hey, there it is. You know, you don't need to go and collect it. You don't need to heat it up on a fire so you can have a nice warm shower in the middle of the winter. You know, there's all of these kind of things that we really do take for granted growing up and living in cities and having access to those sorts of things literally on tap. And all of the other crap that we're told that we need in our lives, which we don't need, they're luxuries. Every single extra that we have beyond, you know, even
according
look,
to
roof,
whom? According to whom?
They are. They're luxuries.
According to whom?
Well, as far as I'm concerned,
okay.
That's a luxury.
Okay. All right. There are some people like Bill Gates who would not consider any of the things that he has a luxury. But
how do you know?
Well, because
he might.
He's an American. He doesn't consider any of that a luxury. It's just his right, his God-given right.
He may feel like that. He may not feel like that. You know,
everybody
he may
who's
be
rich does. Everybody who's rich does.
Okay.
Right. The 1% definitely are not concerned with the rest of the population. Otherwise, they wouldn't be the 1%.
Okay. I'm not going to put them all in that little box. But
I am. I'm going to punish them all. I'm going to, once I become recognized as the God that I am, they will be severely punished. I don't know how, but something will happen. They'll be poor. They'll be living in mud huts and happy about it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But honestly, it for me, traveling has really opened up my eyes and my heart, and I'm really grateful that I got the experience to really travel to some really amazing places from quite young, off my own accord, and gain such an insight and an appreciation for the small things in life. You know, I think really I do appreciate all of these small things that we have around us. And I try not to take things for granted. And sure, I'm sure I get used to things and do take things for granted. But I do like to sort of tap back into, hang on a second, just remember that everything around me is a luxury. And there are plenty of people on this planet that don't have that luxury.
Yep. Oh, I mean, I can walk outside and see people who are homeless and don't have even what I have. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are times that I don't feel very grateful for what I have. And I've got to be reminded. It's like, hey, punk, look at what's going on around you.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I am always grateful for what I have, you know, but there are times you get down and things aren't always going your way and you start to become ungrateful because you start to become dissatisfied. And so that's when you have to remember that, look at what I have. That's when you start your gratitude list up again. Right. Yeah. And you start to work on those things and you start to remind yourself of all of the great things that are happening in your life.
Yeah, sure. It's almost like the more you have, the bigger the desire, you know, the more the desire to kind of get something bigger, right?
More.
And then you lose sight of what you actually have now. I mean, to go to a fridge and open a fridge, that is a big deal. And again, a lot of people don't see that as a big deal, but it really is a big deal,
right?
To have that, you know, fresh food that stays fresh for a number of days because it's in a cooling machine.
right. I mean, we forget, and here's something that's interesting in this country. I think that we forget it a lot, and it's interesting the way it pulls on both sides of me, that it's like our country is willing to throw millions and billions of dollars in aid for other countries, which I think is, those other countries need it, right? Mm. However, when we have people in this country that are starving, don't have running water, don't have electricity, because they're on Native American land and we have, you know, stole the rest of everything else from them. And we've got people here that can't afford to, you know, eat and that sort of thing and have medical care. I struggle with that sometimes. I mean, I understand us needing to help other countries. I do. But what about that saying that, you know, you put your own oxygen mask on first? Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of being selfish or turning your back, but how do we help those people?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big question. It's a big discussion and a topic for another
absolutely
time.
Yeah. How did we even get off on that?
Well, the idea of, you know, appreciating what you have.
Yeah.
But I think going back to where we've gone on major tangents today, but that's fine. Going back to our original topic of traveling, I think the stress of traveling, if you can be excited about the process and look forward to it and take it as again, it's a luxury, the fact that you get to travel, the fact that you get to go abroad, the fact that you get to go on an aeroplane, the fact that you know, or go wherever it is that you're going, it's a luxury. So being grateful for that, looking forward to it, and just taking it one step at a time, you know, from the initial stages of booking and planning and packing and then actually getting to the airport or wherever it is that you're going, however it is that you're traveling. My motto really is one breath at a time. You know, whatever you're doing, one breath, one step at a time, and try and enjoy the process as you go through it.
Well, yeah, you can't really do it any other way anyhow. You can try, but
you're
going to fail.
You could do it the stressful way, where everything's stressful and the whole thing is just a ball of stress the whole entire time. Or you can just chill and take it one step at a time.
Yep. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm not buying my tickets until I get there for any of my train travel. I'm like, whatever. My mom's like, okay, well, if you get here, just take the cab from blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, it's an island. I'm not going to get that lost.
Yeah, it is an island. It is.
Anyway.
Cool. Well, we've gone around the houses a little bit today. We've talked about travel. We've talked about gratitude. We've talked about mindset and things that you learn when you travel and see other people and other cultures. I can't remember if we've thrown anything else into the mix there.
Gosh, we just did, because, you know, and it was just because we just decided to have an interesting because, you know, I'm getting ready to travel. I'm still, I still have a bit of COVID brain, I think. I'm incoherent to some degree. It's all the COVID. And so anyway, yeah, it was an interesting conversation today.
It was. So we'll be back again next week. And we don't know what we're going to be talking about next week. We'll let you know at the time.
Yep. We're going to be together, probably recording.
We'll probably be recording live, both in the same room.
We'll have to do a Facebook Live together.
That would be cool. Yeah, we'll do.
Yeah, we'll do that on the day of the colloquium, you and Tim and I, for 20 minutes. We'll be like, oh my God, look how fabulous we are, everybody. Yay!
All right, everybody, take care. We will see you next week.
Yep, thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook. You can also join our mailing list at hypnotichealers.com.